Turkey is the only NATO member that is also part of SCO to create a more fair and peaceful world. And we need a security organization that represents all of humanity, not just the West.
I do expect to see that the summit could yield rich outcomes and inject more solidarity and more coordination and vitality into the organization. But I think the most importantly is into the world.
Direct exports from Gwadar to this beautiful city, Tianjin, that is going to host the SCO summit. It has marked a significant step toward realizing SCO's vision of integrated regional trade.
By connecting these countries by the Belt and Road Initiative, the SCO countries will really have a leg up in terms of infrastructure, trade, energy development, and sustainability.
The Chat Lounge.
Chat Lounge.
Chat Lounge.
The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
Hello and welcome to Chat Lounge. I'm Xu Yawen. The 2025 SCO Summit is set to take place in Tianjin, China on August 31st and September 1st. The Tianjin Summit will mark the largest gathering in Shanghai Cooperation Organization's history, with leaders from over 20 countries and heads of 10 international organizations coming together to discuss pressing regional and global issues. Since assuming the rotating presidency at the Astana Summit in July 2024, China has initiated over 100 events under the theme SCO Year of Sustainable Development and the slogan Upholding the Shanghai Spirit, SCO on the Move, aiming to deepen cooperation across politics, security, trade, culture, and people-to-people exchanges. In this episode, we'll delve into how the Shanghai spirit will be brought to life at the SCO Tianjin Summit, the future it aims to shape for member states, and its broader significance for global cooperation. Joining me on the line are my colleague Wang Mengjie, CGTN reporter, Oscar Altenbus, the chief of the Foreign News Service at Aidenlik, Mohammad Zamir Asadi, editor at the China desk of Internews Pakistan, and Henry Kuven, a contributor at the Times of Central Asia. Welcome to the show. Mengjie, the SCO summit is taking place in a port city in northern China, known for its unique blending of modern skyscrapers, cultural heritage, and high-tech industries. So what makes Tianjin an ideal host for the summit?
I think Tianjin is a very happy city. You know, it can keep in touch with everyone, both at home and abroad. Why do I say so? I think you can tell from its local people and their wisdom towards life. Once I heard from a local saying that money is not everything, so just be happy. What does that mean? I think the optimism is a DNA that deeply rooted at the city and its people. I also think that Tianjin is an attractive city with its beautiful culture and arts. The Tianjin Eye, for example, offers a stunning view about the city's skyline. The Five Avenue District is a testament to the city's past. Openness is another key word for me, as I think is one of the four municipalities in China. Tianjin lies at the intersection of the Belt and Road. It is also the maritime gateway of the Beijing-Tianjin-Hebei region. With a population of nearly 14 million, you know, Tianjin is the largest open coastal city in North China. And when we looking back in 2008, Tianjin became an association city hosting the Olympic Games with Beijing. And in the same year that Tianjin hosted the Summer Davos Forum. And from then on, Tianjin has hosted the Summer Davos Forum every 2 years. So I think it's happy, it's attractive, and it's open. And these are the words that describe Tianjin in my eyes.
I actually been to Tianjin a couple of times covering the Summer Davos, as you just mentioned. I know you've been following the news of the upcoming SCO summit. So as the city, Tianjin is about to welcome guests from around the world, what specific efforts has it done to ensure the success of the summit?
I think there are, you can think about the issue from different angles, but as so far as I learned, you know, the SCO summit is expected to adopt a strategy, you know, in Tianjin and guiding its development through 2035. This is one of the historical moments for this organization. And just next week, I'm going to go into the Tianjin port to visit how this port could be a bridge connecting the Tianjin city, the China, with the world. So I'm also looking forward to how preparation and how well preparation the country, if the city is going to be for the upcoming summits.
Oscar, you visited Tianjin in June, exploring its cultural streets, enjoyed a boat tour along the Haihe River, and also visited Tianjin Port, which is the world's first smart zero-carbon port in China. What stood out the most to you about the city?
So first of all, thank you for having me. Greetings to all participants. So yes, we can start, of course, from Tianjin, because it's a really, really beautiful city and also is a very important city for China, both historically and economically. It is also one of the most developed cities in the country. So a major reason for its development is the spatial growth program created by Communist Party of China for Tianjin, of course. Thanks to this program, Tianjin has become one of China's top port cities. So I want to talk about the Tianjin port, of course, because it's especially impressive. It is one of the most advanced ports in the world, using artificial intelligence and automation at very high level. My older brother is an inspector for shipping and ports, like surveyor. So I recorded some videos from the Tianjin port and like automation, self-driving vehicles, moving containers at the port of Tianjin, and sent to him. And he said, I've been in dozens of ports, but I have never seen anything like this, like high technology and artificial intelligence. So the technology at the Tianjin port surprises not only ordinary people, but also professional in the field. So because of that, really, really important, I think, for the industry of the like sea industry. So, and also the other way of the Tianjin is also city with deep cultural importance. It is located on the maritime route of the ancient Silk Road, which shows its historic role as a global trade hub. And today, it plays a similar role in the modern Belt and Road Initiative, making it a key city for China's international trade strategy, I think. So also at the same time, Tianjin represents traditional Chinese culture. That's why it is very, very meaning that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit is being held in this city. A city that connects the past Silk Road and the present Belt and Road sends powerful message, I think. So it shows that humanity is connected through shared history and culture. I think the one of the key points for this summit, because it's going to be held in Tianjin. So from this point of view, I can say, I believe that choosing Tianjin as the host city for the summit is a very symbolic and important decision.
Zamir, Pakistan became a full member of SCO in 2017. And over the years, how has this role evolved in the organization, say, from economic cooperation to regional security?
Yes, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to talk on this very important issue that has really, created a buzz around the globe. And literally, I was, reading through some international newspaper. Everyone is focused on the importance of the SCO summit that is going to be hosted in Tianjin, a very beautiful city. As far as the Pakistan is concerned, I think since officially becoming a full member of this very, prestigious platform, SCO, Pakistan, I think, has made a very meaningful progress in strengthening its role within the organization. And particularly if I talk about the areas of economic cooperation and the regional security, that is very important as far as the common development is concerned. And economically, I think Pakistan has emerged as a vital connector between South Asia, Central Asia, and China. And it is just because of the economic growth and the economic vibrancy that Pakistan is witnessing in the recent years. And I think the development of the Gwadar Port as part of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor has enhanced Pakistan's strategic importance by offering a shorter and more efficient trade routes for SCO member states. I think direct exports from Gwadar to this beautiful city, Tianjin, that is going to host the SCO summit, it has marked a significant step toward realizing SCO's vision of integrated regional trade. And with the continued development, Pakistan is poised to serve as logistics and transit hub for Central Asia. And by working together, is getting an access to global markets via Arabian Sea. So I think that in terms of the regional security, Pakistan has played a responsible and a constructive role within the SCO framework. And I think in the coming SCO summit, Pakistan is very committed and really ready to participate and to share its ideas of development, prosperity, and working together under the SCO platform.
Mm-hmm. Hari, as a Central Asia reporter, you have focused on landlocked countries' efforts to overcome geographical barriers, and Tianjin as a key maritime hub, as other guests have just discussed, have been cooperating with Central Asian states through rail and sea intermodal transportations. So how has this infrastructure reduced the trade costs for Kyrgyzstan and also other Central Asian nations? Could you share a story of a local business benefiting from this connectivity?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me back on the channel. It's great to be here. And as you mentioned, Tianjin has really become a vital maritime outlet for Kyrgyzstan and other Central Asian countries via China's Belt and Road Initiative infrastructure, and particularly through the China-Kyrgyzstan-Uzbekistan rail route, businesses in Kyrgyzstan have been able to export their products to Tianjin for a fraction of the cost and are able to receive products from the other side in a much quicker fashion. So for instance, now cargo that is transported from Tianjin to Urumqi and then trucked into Kyrgyzstan can arrive in under 2 weeks at a cost of 20 to 30% less than before when trucks and trains had to go through Russia and then through Kazakhstan before. And an example of a local business that has been benefiting from this is a company called Akun Textile, which is a Bishkek-based fabrics company. And they used to export their products through Kazakhstan and then to Russia to enter China. But now, because of the new infrastructure that exists, Akun has been able to increase their annual export volume by 15% and has been able to enter markets within Southeast Asia, such as the Vietnamese and Malaysian markets. And for a small textile company in Central Asia, it's a huge advantage for them to have quicker access to shipping and materials provided by this infrastructure.
Well, that's very fruitful outcome out of this connectivity.
The Chat Lounge. The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
Meng Jie, so other guests have just talked about how strong that the Tianjin port has boosted the trade with your nations. So from China's perspective, could you elaborate on the Tianjin port's role in boosting SCO economic cooperation? And how do these efforts align with the SCO Year of Sustainable Development in your view?
Of course, you know, in my opinion, I think Tianjin port is not just moving goods. It's moving us into a green future. So far, as I learned, the drivers no longer, you know, endure the bumping campaign since 2024. They now control the large equipment remotely just from their office. And I really did some homework, you know, connecting with over 500 ports in over 180 countries and regions. The port built the world's first smart zero carbon terminal in just 21 months, and the faster changing Central Asia freight trade service just started at this point in May 2025. And compared to previous routes, the Central Asia freight trade service reduced total logistics costs by 20 to 30%, making the port one of the, I think, preferred hubs for Central Asia bulk cargo. And in early March, Tianjin Port announced to lift the container throughput to 35 million by 2035. So I think the plan just, you know, shows the port city is accelerating its transition from a channel economy to port economy, integrating the port operation, the industry, and the urban development. And speaking of the SCO cooperation, I think SCO member states actually have enormous complementary advantages and the potential in the fields of sustainable development. And the investment cooperation is also able to be promoted in key areas such as oil and gas, the manufacturing, the green economy and digital economy, and of course the logistics cooperation, such as the lessons we can learn or the practical cooperation we have from the Tianjin port to promote the industrial transformation and among the SCO member states, and make the industrial and the supply chains of SCO more close connected.
Well, Oscar, let's focus on Turkey's role in the organization. We know since the country became an SCO dialogue partner in 2012, its engagement has evolved from passive participation to active collaboration. What do you make of these changes? Also, we know as SCO dialogue partners, Turkey has been exploring innovative cooperation in technology and new energy vehicles, for instance. What do you make of this cooperation? Like, how do these initiatives align with Turkey's middle corridor strategy?
It's a really good question. Actually, the answer is really simple, because the in-world system is changing. The world is clearly moving toward a multipolar system. We are not living in the 90s or early 2000s. It is no longer controlled by a single global power. So one of the clearest signs of this is the growing importance of groups like the SCO and BRICS. Like 15 years ago, there were no SCO and BRICS, but right now there is. Today, there is no longer a system based on the dominance of one country. So countries like China, Turkey, Russia, Iran, Brazil, and many others from the global south are helping to shape this new world order. So one of the Turkey's objectives is to become a full member of the SCO. Right now we are a dialogue partner, but I believe in the future we become a full member of this SCO. So it's and it will be really, really helpful for the create a new multipolar system, I think. So what makes this change special is that this country are building relationships based on the equality and mutual respect. They do not try to control each other through military or economic pressure. Instead, they work together in ways that benefit everyone, a win-win situation that supports the growth of all involved. So let's talk about the energy, because it's the energy is really important for the Turkey. Search for energy is very important because Turkey depends heavily on foreign energy sources. We don't have like Saudi Arabia and UAE. We don't have a lot of energy sources like Russia or Iran. So one way to reduce this dependency is by using more electric vehicles. It will help. So this would not only help Turkey save money, but also improve its energy security. We are currently seeing a significant investment from China in Turkey for the production of electric vehicles. For example, we can talk about the BYD. Right now, China's largest electric vehicle manufacturer, BYD, is opening a large factory in the city of Manisa, located in western Turkey. So once this factory is complete and begins producing electric vehicles, the use of electric vehicles in Turkey will increase. So this will reduce fossil fuel consumption. So many people in Turkey are currently awaiting the completion of this factory. They're really caring about this. So the middle corridor about this issue plays a really key role here. It can bring great benefits to the region, especially in energy and trade, of course. For example, it could help transport natural gas from Iran, Russia to Turkey. I mean, The Middle Corridor is also an important part of the Belt and Road Initiative, of course. In fact, these two projects support and strengthen each other. Ensuring the smooth and safe operation of the Middle Corridor is important, not just for Turkey, but also for China, Russia, Iran, and other regional countries. So this corridor is especially valuable for rail and road transport, of course. In the past, freight trains from China used this road to reach Turkey and Europe. Maybe you can remember the Xi'an to the Prague, the one-way train rail. They start from the Xi'an to the Czech Republic to Prague directly through the Turkey. So the Middle Corridor will help bring economic growth to the entire region thanks to its connection with the Belt and Road Initiative, I think.
The mayor, so Pakistan's Luban Workshop, it was co-founded with Tianjin Modern Vocational College, has trained many Pakistani technical workers in the past. And Pakistan's ambassador to China recently called it a model for CPAC talent development. So in your view, what impact has graduate had on local industries? And how does Luban Workshop address Pakistan's long-term need for industrial talent?
I think whatever the projects or the initiatives from China are being introduced, they are gaining a huge attention from the developing countries because it is fulfilling the needs of their development. So I think in recent years, the collaboration between Pakistan and China has taken significant strides by beyond infrastructure development and energy projects, moving firmly into the realm of human capital development. So the establishment of Luban workshops in Pakistan, as like other countries, it is co-founded with the Tianjin Modern Vocational College, stands as a shining example of the next phase of the cooperation. And I think under the broader vision of the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, that is famously called the BRI around the globe. I think as far as with this Shanghai Cooperation Organization is concerned, the workshop represents a winner investment in Pakistan's industrial future. Because, you know, if we talk about the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, again, under the Belt and Road Initiative, and with a mutual consultation, a meaningful consultation, win-win situation, his recent visit to China, Pakistan's ambassador to China rightly called the Luban workshop as an exemplary model. These workshops fosters knowledge transfer and promotes innovation and helps bridge the gap between academic education and industrial application. So I think I have witnessed one of the center of the Luban workshop in Pakistan, and we have talked with the guys who are being trained in these Luban workshops. It has the training and the skill has really changed the lives of the people who are getting the training in the Luban workshops. They are really serving the needs of the developments in Pakistan. And then with the trainings they are gained from the Luban workshops, these people who have been trained in the Luban workshop, they are also serving in other countries as well. So I think this Luban workshop model, the collaboration between China and Pakistan, has really emerged as a tool that is really helping the people to fulfill their economic needs as well.
Hurry. Kyrgyzstan relies on agriculture and tourism. So what SCO-backed projects have directly improved livelihoods based on your observation? And how do these projects reflect on the people-centered spirit of cooperation?
Absolutely. So I think something that's very important to highlight before I answer the question about agriculture is water scarcity. As the climate continues to warm, Central Asia is affected at a higher rate than other regions in the world in terms of water scarcity. And Kyrgyzstan has really benefited from the SCO demonstration base for agricultural technology exchange and training in Yangling, where farmers and agronomists have taken part in exchanges to learn about more sustainable farming practices, such as modern irrigation and drip irrigation, as well as greenhouse techniques. There's been a pilot program that has done well in the Osh province of southern Kyrgyzstan, where farmers are now using solar-powered drip irrigation systems that use substantially less water than the older systems using corroded pipes from the Soviet days. These practices save up to 40% of water usage and have yielded very good amounts of fruits and vegetables. And now farmers have started to import crops from Turkey, such as citrus and olives, to grow with the new drip irrigation systems to rely less on produce imports. And then in terms of tourism, the SCO has supported Kyrgyzstan's participation in the Youth Cultural Exchange Camp, as well as the Tourism Year in 2023, when it featured Lake Issyk-Kul as the flagship destination. Additionally, the city of Karakol has been allocated the Destination Karakol Initiative, which has been funded by multilateral partnerships with SCO support and has really taken Karakol, Kyrgyzstan's third largest city, up a notch in terms of training local tour guides and homestay operators. And as a result, since about 2021, tourism revenue and numbers in the region have risen over about 20%, not only because of these efforts, but also due to the fact that Karakol is a four-season city where you can ski in the winter, hike in the spring and the fall, and in the summer, enjoy Lake Issyk-Kul, which is truly an incredible place to be in the summer. And then furthermore, all of these efforts not only will benefit the farmers and the tourists, but will trickle down to the local populations as well. It will help invest in skill training, job creation, and regional cultural ties by learning from others, whether it's about drip irrigation or promoting sustainable tourism. It will all be up from here.
This is Chat Lounge. Let's take a short break. Coming back, we will continue our discussion.
Sideline Story brings you all things sports related. The hottest topics, latest events, juiciest stories, all with a very personal take. Subscribe to Sideline Story Podcast for heated sports discussions covering events that are happening in China and around the world.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Chat Lounge. Let's continue our discussion. Now let's shift the gears to the media cooperation and global governance under the framework of the SCO. Meng Jie, so at the recent Zhengzhou Media and Think Tank Summit, a consensus was reached highlighting the pivotal role of media and think tanks as guiding forces for SCO cooperation. So what do you make of this significant role that media plays in enhancing SCO cooperation? And how can Chinese media better amplify the underrepresented narratives to promote mutual understanding?
You know, media played a role as a bridge telling the stories of SCO and showcasing the achievements and advancements of the Shanghai cooperation and contributing their wisdom to promote peace, stability and development. And building consensus and increasing mutual trust, I think this is another responsibility media need to shoulder and to respect or safeguard each other's core interests to build the common home of the SCO. And the harmonious development of diverse civilization, I think, is a beautiful vision of the peoples among the SCO member states. And to better cover SCO stories, you know, take CGTN as an example. You know, we report or cover the SCO-related stories or each piece of the story, I think, from a vibrant perspective. Why? Because we are an international media organization with aim to promoting the understanding between China and the world. And I think here is one of the vivid examples I would like to share with you guys. You know, just in early April this year, I attended one of the, I think this is the first supporting event on the Muslim summit. And I attend this event, which is called the China SCO Conference on Industrial Cooperation for Sustainable Development. You know, I was honored to have the chance to talk with the Sohail Khan, Mr. the Deputy Secretary of the SCO organization. And just, you know, before the start of our conversation, and he just encountered me and said, "Oh, hello there, this is CGTN, I love it." He just get a glimpse of my microphone with the CGTN logo on it. And, you know, this is one of the most impressive moments during that day, the other day's coverage. And I asked him why you were so happy. And he said, because the CGTN is kind of like the international media connecting China and the world. And especially he feels closer to the world as a foreign audience to watch CGTN. And so I start to learn why media need to go to the front line to, you know, speak up and to stand out. And I hope I can just, you know, share a little story with you guys.
Media today, we're not only collecting facts, reporting facts, but also we're a bridge between nations to bring people's heart closer. Zamir, I know you also attended the Zhengzhou summit. So from your perspective, how did the media and think tank representatives from the SCO countries work together to bridge differences and focus on the shared goal of building a common home?
Yes, it was a pleasure. Recently, I attended two of the media and think tank summits. One was held in the Xinjiang, and the other one was held in Zhengzhou. So I feel lucky that I got an opportunity to attend both of these two summits that really represented the voice of the media outlets from the and the think tanks from the SCO countries. And I think attending the SCO media and think tank summit, especially in Zhengzhou, was not just a professional milestone, but it was a moving reminder that how dialogue, a shared vision, and mutual respect can unite a diverse region, you know, centered on the theme of upholding Shanghai's spirit to build a more beautiful home. I think the summit brought together the voices from across the Shanghai Cooperation Organization countries, and the journalists and the researchers and the policy thinkers were committed to advancing the regional peace, development, and understanding. And I believe that such kind of gatherings provide an opportunity to the diverse opinion of the SCO countries. And we were able to reach a consensus that we will be helping each other by narrating the stories of our country in the SCO member countries collectively. And it was decided that these stories should be, you know, localized and should be translated in the local languages of the SCO countries. So anything happening in Islamabad can be felt in Uzbekistan. Anything that is happening in China, in the people's life, can really be translated in Russia. So I think such kind of translation, such kind of a localization of the news stories, you know, it helps the people to interact, to develop a good understanding of each other, and to learn from the achievements of each other. I think this is a time when we are witnessing a misinformation and propaganda campaigns that are fueled by Western countries against the SCO platform and SCO member countries. And we should encounter the propaganda, the fake campaign about the development, about the prosperity, and about the mutual working of SCO countries. So I think one particularly meaningful session in the Zhengzhou Media and Think Tank Summit was roundtable that was about media as a bridge for shared future. That was really very interesting. And we had delegates from China, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan, I think, shared stories of how media collaboration has helped fight misinformation and build cultural understanding. I was proud to highlight joint Pakistan-China documentary projects on the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, which have played a vital role in countering stereotypes and promoting positive narratives about regional cooperation.
You talk about how the role that media should play as a bridge between countries. I want to discuss this elephant in the room, which is the relationship between India and Pakistan, since both countries are SCO members. What role do you think SCO should play in managing the complicated relationship between India and Pakistan, especially from media's perspective?
I think as far as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is concerned, I think it stands a vital platform for promoting regional peace, security, and cooperation among its member states. And for countries like Pakistan and India, which share a complex history of unresolved dispute. I think the SCO offers a unique and neutral forum rooted in the spirit of good neighborliness, mutual respect, and dialogue. And I think Pakistan has always viewed the SCO as a viable vehicle to strengthen regional stability and foster a constructive engagement among all member countries of SCO. So I think SCO is a kind of a platform that really promotes and projects the good relationship between its member states. So what we feel as a Pakistani journalist, I would like to comment that SCO has a great platform, and as a great platform can facilitate to normalize the relationship between its member countries, especially between Pakistan and India. I think there is the realization in the region that the normal relationship between Pakistan and India can be vital for the sustainable economic growth, not only in South Asia, but in the Central Asia as well, by utilizing the SCO platform. And as far as the role of the media is concerned, I am the great advocate of the media connections, the journalist exchange programs, the journalist fellowship program between Pakistan and India and between the SCO member countries that can be facilitated by SCO platform. I would also like to suggest that there must be such kind of a fellowship program that could, you know, provide an opportunity to the journalists of different countries of SCO, like either it is from Pakistan, India, Russia, China, and other countries, that the journalists from these countries must be given a unique, a separate platform where they can work together to develop narrative that is help that will be helpful in establishing a peace and stability in the region. And I think such kind of a platform will be providing opportunities for to the journalists that sometimes will be maybe working in New Delhi together, sometimes they will be working in Islamabad together, sometimes they will be working in Beijing or Moscow together. So I think this will be a great platform that will be helpful in creating harmony, coexistence, and peaceful development.
Oscar, we know Turkey's dual role as a NATO member and SCO dialogue partner gives it a unique perspective on global order. So from a media standpoint, how does Turkey's balance these identities to promote the SCO's agenda of what we say common, comprehensive, cooperative, and sustainable security?
It's a really critical question because Turkey is the only NATO member that is also part of SCO and also has the second largest army in NATO. But NATO is a security organization built for a unipolar world, led mainly by the West. So media, and also we as a media member, a significant responsibility about this. Why? Because a new global system needs a new approach to security. To create a more fair and peaceful world, and we need a security organization that represents all of humanity, not just the West. So you know, we need to ask those questions. Where is the world headed? And where will we stand? We will remain on the right side of the history or on the wrong side of the history. So if you look at past NATO reports, you will see that Russia and China are described as traits. So, but seeing these countries as enemies does not help global security or equality, because I cannot imagine a new system or new global security without Russia and China. So as a media members, as a media, we need to tell the truth to our people. So for example, Turkey's position in NATO is different from that the other members. Some countries in NATO don't fully trust or accept Turkey. So because of this, Turkey can play a special role in building a new fair security system. You know, Turkey has a strong and experienced army. Also, although it is a NATO member, Turkey is open to working with non-NATO countries too. For example, we bought a Russian S-400 missiles defense systems. But the United States punished Turkey with the sanctions because of this, because we were trying to defend ourselves. Because of that, the United States punished Turkey. So we need to tell the people of face of this NATO. So the media has a significant responsibility. It's a crucial tool for shaping public perception. public perception. In doing so, we must present the facts. The reality is that the world is no longer under the hegemony of a single power. New partnership and alliances are being formed. Media is in a critical position to highlight this. Because Turkey is a NATO member, most security ideas in the media still reflects NATO's point of view. But recently, we see more discussions about other organizations like SCO and BRICS. Turkish media, I think, is now talking more about these groups than ever before, like SCO, BRICS, and another Asian organization, and also Global South organization. Some well-known academics and writers even say that Turkey should leave NATO. Right now, you can see a lot of articles, like works in a Turkish media about this issue, like leaving NATO. So anti-NATO ideas are becoming more common in Turkey. All of this shows that a new global security system may be starting to form.
What do local people in Turkey think of the idea of having the country leaving NATO and become a full member of SCO? The public opinions?
Of course, one of our goals is a full member of SCO, of course. And after 2016 military coup, Turkish people, a lot of Turkish people doesn't trust NATO anymore because some documents showing us and there is some NATO issues was in that military coup. So right now in Turkey, the people talking about NATO is our ally or is our enemy right now. And this is a really good chance to understand the NATO in right now in Turkey, because our relations after 2016, it's not stable with NATO. But SCO, we are more close to Asian organization, like global, or I should say the Global South organization, like SCO and BRICS. Now the people are starting to talking, I mean, discuss about how can we become a BRICS member or full member of the SCO. So because of that, in the media, you can see a lot of things about this. Some articles, also some writers, the perception been changed after 2016 military coup, because the people know there is exactly, absolutely, there is some NATO issues in that military coup. Because of that, right now, the people, Turkish people, feeling more close to Asian organization.
Henry, from media perspective, what untold stories do you think deserve more attention? And also at the Zhengzhou summit, they were proposing to tell more success stories of SCO cooperation rather than highlighting divisions. Do you agree with that and why?
Of course, I'll work backwards. I think it's very important to highlight the cooperation between countries, whether they are a part of alliances or are working towards being aligned. It really breaks it down into more manageable aspects for everyday people to understand and see that, you know, at the end of the day, we all want what's best for our families and for our loved ones. And I think that highlighting specific work in Central Asia with cooperation with China related to farming and new irrigation techniques would be a great place to start, because at this point, like I mentioned earlier, water scarcity is becoming a more and more pressing issue in Central Asia due to old Soviet water systems that in some cases waste more water than they deliver. So I think, you know, from a sustainability point of view, from a farmer point of view, and from a human point of view, that would be a great place to start. And I think some untold stories from the SCO world that should be highlighted is that we've been seeing a quiet boom of women tech entrepreneurs in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan. There is a new nonprofit called Oasis Tech Hub, based out of Kyrgyzstan, which is helping rural girls become independent entrepreneurs in the tech sphere, teaching them how to code, get access to the internet, classes, and all of that. And it's really amazing because, you know, not too long ago, you really had to move to the big city in whichever country you were living in to find job opportunities. But with now and the power of the internet, online courses and online instruction, people can work from anywhere. And by, you know, getting girls involved in tech and in STEM, it sends a really great message to people everywhere that you can do, you know, whatever you have the power you think you can do. And I think that's really inspiring.
The Chat Lounge. The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
As we come to the close to our discussion, let's look at the future of the SCO. And Meng Jie, we know this year China hosts the SCO presidency. So what's your assessment of its performance? And also, what are your expectations for the upcoming summit?
Well, you know, before I'm talking about my expectation, I think I want to introduce something like Shanghai spirit. You know, over the past years, the SCO has further promoted the Shanghai spirit. But what is the Shanghai spirit? I think it is an underlying value for the SCO. Promotes mutual trust, mutual benefits, equality, consultation, respectful diversity of civilization, and pursuit of common development. So that's why I believe the upcoming summit will further carry forward the Shanghai spirit to strengthen the cooperation and to boost the stability and development. Why? Because the profound changes on the inner century are just unfolding before our eyes. I think the SCO will continue to speak up about the major international and regional issues, to uphold justice, to formally uphold the multilateral trading system, and strongly condemn the abuse of armed forces. And China, of course, will continue to work with the SCO member states to advance SCO reform or innovation in various fields to ensure smoother and more efficient operation within the organization. I do expect to see that the summit could yield rich outcomes and inject more solidarity and more coordination and vitality into the organization. But I think the most importantly is into the world.
Oscar, so what's your assessment of China's efforts in implementing SCO on the move during its presidency? Also, we know Turkey has expressed interest in upgrading its SCO status. What expectations does Turkey have for the outcome of the summit to lay a foundation for enhanced collaboration with the SCO member states?
Yes, of course. First of all, I congratulate to my Chinese friend because it will held in Tianjin, this summit. So I think SCO as an organization needs to be more active, especially in the military and security fields. The SCO should take stronger steps towards implementing peaceful strategies to help resolve global conflicts. If it does, it can help change the way many countries view global security. For example, in the recent conflict between Thailand and Cambodia, China played an important role in securing a ceasefire. This was a significant success, not only for China, but also for the SCO, because China is the member of the SCO. But it's not enough to stop conflicts. The real success is preventing them before they start. So right now, there's many conflicts are going in different parts of the world, like such as Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, and Somalia. The organization that can help solve this crisis will help shape the new world order. That's why the SCO has a major responsibility. So I believe that the Tianjin summit will introduce new initiatives, especially to help resolve these conflicts. Every SCO summit has inspired and encouraged me because I believe, the world, new order will be shaped by the actions of these countries. So I expect that security and economic issue will be the main focus of this summit, I think. The world should no longer be under the control of a single currency, like dollar, American dollar. So that situation limits the economic independence of many countries. This is a really, really big problem for Global South especially. A fairer global economy depends on moving away from a system where one country controls the global currency. Finally, I think discussions about how to end current conflicts will be one of the most important parts of the summit. And also, I believe after this summit, the SCO will take more active steps, both in military cooperation and economic development, I think.
Coming to the end of the discussion, Zamir, this is a question for you. In your view, what specific outcomes from the Tianjin Summit do you hope to see that will shape the future of the SCO? And why do you think the summit is important, not only for SCO nations, but also for the world as a whole?
I think we have already talked that the SCO has emerged as a platform that is really providing a great opportunities for the member countries. As far as the economic development is concerned, the mutual prosperity is concerned, and an opportunity that where China, Russia, and other countries can share their experiences and their achievements with each other. And I think it is a need of a time as when there is a lot of developments as far as the technological advancements are concerned, either it is about artificial intelligence, big data, cloud computing, or the robotics industry. I think this is a time when such kind of initiatives or the achievement must be shared with each other. I think with other initiatives, with other engagements, with other dialogue and talks, I would really like to see a good outcome where the SCO can emerge as a vital platform to share its achievements with member countries as far as the technological advancements are concerned, because that is the future of the world. And then definitely SCO must provide and must act as an active proponent where the member countries can enhance its trade volume. You know, when we are witnessing the tariffs, the trade barriers and the restrictions from America and some other countries, then definitely there is a need of the time that the SCO member countries should help each other to increase the bilateral and multilateral trade volumes under this platform. I think that will be a big outcome. That will be a big success of this summit.
Very well said. And lastly, Henry, how do you think the summit will shape the future of SCO countries, especially those in Central Asia? And also, since Kyrgyzstan is about to take over the SCO presidency for the year of 2025 to 2026, what do you think they will focus on to boost the regional cooperation?
Absolutely. I think it's very important to see that the Central Asian countries are coming together and putting aside their differences for the greater goal. Land disputes, border disputes, water disputes are being solved more or less peacefully. And I think that we're seeing really a resurgence of the Turkic world in conjunction with China, spanning from Turkey through Central Asia all the way to, Shanghai and Beijing. And I think that it will act as not only a counterweight to, Western influence, but it will act as its own, world and trading partner, economic sphere in its own right. And I think by connecting these countries by the Belt and Road Initiative, the SCO countries will really have a leg up in terms of infrastructure, trade, energy development, and sustainability when, all projects are completed and people can realize the effects of such great infrastructure investment in their countries. And I think that in terms of Kyrgyzstan's ascension to the council, I think that we'll see more of an active role from the Central Asian countries, especially now that there is more foreign investment from countries like Turkey and China into countries like Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan, particularly in the tech sphere. I think we're going to see a lot of new innovation coming out of Central Asia, apps, maybe even factories of some sorts related to maybe semiconductors or drones or other forms of consumer goods. And I think that there's a lot to look forward to.
With that, we're wrapping up this episode of Chat Lounge. I've been speaking with Wang Mengjie, CGTN reporter, Oscar Altenbus, the chief of the Foreign News Service at Aidenlic, Muhammad Zamir Asadi, editor of the China desk of Internews Pakistan, and Hengar Kuven, a contributor at the Times of Central Asia. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend.